This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Corva Coleman in Washington. Neil Conan is out today. The United States currently has 130,000 troops stationed in Iraq and another 10,000 in Afghanistan. And every day a few of them come home on medical transport planes. As these newest combat veterans finish medical treatment and leave military hospitals, they enter one of the federal government's largest and most complex bureaucracies, the Veterans Administration. The VA operates more than 1,000 hospitals and outpatient clinics around the country, serving nearly 5 million people last year. However, some critics charge the system is overwhelmed. There are stories of overloaded hospitals and long delays for newly discharged veterans who need treatment. The American Legion claims the average wait for a doctor's appointment is 7 months. Nearly 300,000 veterans are still waiting for a disability rating, and the proposed 2004 budget would raise the cost of some services to vets themselves. In response, the Veterans Administration is in the midst of reevaluating many of its programs and looking at some hard changes. Joining me this hour to talk about the Veterans Administration now and in the future is the Secretary of the Office of Veterans Affairs, Anthony Principi. Mr. Principi, thank you for coming by.
Thank you.
If you'd like to join this conversation, are you a veteran? What concerns would you like to discuss with the Secretary? If you're a recent veteran, just learning about the system, we would especially like to hear from you right now. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Mr. Principi, let's start on a personal note if we can. I understand that you have two sons in Iraq right now. Isn't that so?
They were in Iraq. They left shortly after the major hostilities came to an end. They were there at the same time, one in the north, one in the south. So it was a great concern to my wife and myself, but we're very proud of them and proud of the men and women who have served our nation so valiantly in Iraq and Afghanistan, bringing freedom to an oppressed people.
You're a veteran. Your wife is a veteran. Your kids are veterans. How does that affect you as you prepare for returning veterans?
Well, it certainly brings it home to me. And I'm proud. My wife was a Navy nurse during the Vietnam War, and I served in Vietnam. So it gives me an appreciation for service in uniform and the fact that we really need to be there, especially for the men and women coming back from combat theaters of operations. And I try to go up to Bethesda and Walter Reed Army Hospital as often as I can. And I can tell you it's heartbreaking to see some of those young men and women who were wounded in Vietnam, and some very seriously. They've lost their arms or their legs. And yet you can't help but be inspired by their courage in their rehabilitation and their recovery. And some of these young men I've talked to who may have lost a leg, all they're concerned about are the troops that they left behind, and some want to go back, and they want to get that prosthesis on, they want to stay in uniform, and they want to go back and serve their country. And you can't help but become emotionally overwhelmed by that. And on the one hand, we're blessed to have such men and women to serve our nation in uniform, and it's also a stark reminder to me of the importance of my job to take care of them when they're discharged from the military hospital, and they come to the VA, and to ensure that we have the capability to care for them.
You sound a lot like a parent.
Well, I am. I am indeed a parent, and but I'm also a secretary, and I have a huge responsibility. The VA is very large, as you indicated, Corva, the second largest department of the federal government, and I think it's a reflection of how deeply the American people feel about men and women who serve in uniform, that the VA has a budget larger than the entire budget of Great Britain, the defense budget of Great Britain, and probably all the countries combined of South America. But we also have 25 million veterans in this country, 25 million men and women, half of whom, 50 million who served during all periods of our wars. We have 25 million living today. And they're coming to the VA in record numbers for health care. And I think it's for several factors. One is, as you indicated, we now have 1,000 facilities around the country. We've opened up 700 outpatient clinics. In mid-1990s, we didn't have any outpatient clinics. So we've moved the VA in an area where it needs to go, primary care. Secondly is veterans, like all Americans, cannot afford prescription drugs. They can't afford $400 or $500 a month for drugs. You know, that's why so many are going to Canada. In the VA, they can get prescription drugs at $7 per prescription per month, whether you have a military-related disability or not, whether you're rich or poor. And that has caused the demand to increase dramatically. And I think this is not my dad's VA. My dad was a World War II veteran. This is a much more modern, technologically advanced healthcare system we can be very proud of. We're not perfect, and I'm sure I'll hear from some veterans who will tell me that. But we've come a long way in providing high-quality care. So it's like the perfect storm. You've got all these access points. You've got open enrollment. All 25 million come to the VA and prescription drugs and 700 outpatient clinics, and we've had this backlog.
Let's talk a little bit about health care. In 1996, Congress greatly expanded who could become eligible for VA health care. So how have you managed to meet this expanded load?
That you're absolutely correct. In 1996, we went from roughly 2.9 million, 3 million eligible for the full continuum of VA health care to 25 million with a stroke of a pen. And we've grown now to 7 million enrolled, 5 million users, and we've been able to, we haven't collapsed, and I think many healthcare systems in America would collapse under that kind of burden. We've done it several ways. The first is we have transitioned from a hospital-centric healthcare system to a primary care-focused healthcare system with all these outpatient clinics. So we've been able to treat so many more veterans who once in the past had to go into a hospital to get their care, can now go into an outpatient clinic and get surgery and get diagnoses and treatment. We've gone from 26 million outpatient visits to almost 50 million. This year we're online to fill almost 200 million prescriptions for drugs. So I think it's the move to primary care. Secondly, I'm very proud, although a lot of people, including myself, would argue perhaps it's not enough. Our budget has grown 32% in 3 years. I've gone from $48 billion in budget authority in 2001 to, if I get an appropriation bill one of these days, I hope, it'll be about $65 billion. So that's about a 32% increase. And that increase in funding from both our president and from the Congress has enabled us to help to meet some of this demand. But the fact is that we've had waiting lists because of this tremendous demand for prescription drugs and care in places like Florida and the Southeast, and that has hurt.
Well, let's turn to Alex in Florida, specifically in Jacksonville, Florida. Alex, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. When I heard this conversation, I was very happy. I listen to your radio station every day. And I just wanted to praise what the VA has done for me. In my experience, in 2000, I was new to Jacksonville, and I had a sports injury, and I had tore my Achilles tendon playing soccer with my son. I was new here, and didn't have my benefit, so I didn't know where to turn, and I wasn't going to go to the hospital because I thought that maybe I just tore a muscle, and but I was limping, and I didn't, it wasn't getting any better, so I realized that I needed to have constructive surgery, and so I went to Gainesville, and they took care of me. I think I have paid out of pocket maybe $25, $30, and I had to make a couple of trips, but they took care of me, and I just wanted to acknowledge the great services that they did. Today I can run, I can hop, and I'm just very happy about that.
Alex, can you tell me when you served or where you served?
I was in the Navy in from 95 to 98, mm-hmm. and also considered a veteran.
Mm-hmm. Well, you certainly are a veteran, and I just want to say thank you for your service, and I'm pleased that you received good care at our Gainesville facility.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, and I know there's a lot of good stories like that. Sometimes we tend to just focus on the negative, but you know, there's a great service there and great people that work there, and I applaud them.
Thanks a lot for your call, Alex. Mr. Secretary, I've just received an email from John Reynolds, who says he's a medical professional, and he worked for the VA Medical Center in his area for 6 years in the past, but he left because of the poor nature of the institution. He says pay increases, etc., are the worst in the industry. Congress should never be in charge of a hospital system because they don't understand its needs, and in the end, the vets are the folks who suffer.
Well, we certainly do have challenges and problems that we have to address, and pay is one of them. Keeping our pay competitive with the private sector, we have made some advances. I'm not sure if the emailer is a physician. We have a physician pay bill before the Congress now. But indeed, we have to go before Congress to get the authorization to make the changes we need. But we are doing so, and I think the fact that we have 1.2 million more veterans have come to us for care since 2001, when I arrived, I think is some indication that people like the last caller believe that we do provide good care.
Let's try Barb in South Bend, Indiana. Hi, Barb.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much. I just wanted to say that I worked in a VA outpatient clinic. I married a 100% service-connected disabled vet. He's 17 years older than I am, but I'm 40, he's 60, and it just, at times, I want to tell him, no, don't go to the clinic. At times, I want to say yes, and the time that I was there, I felt that my patients were taken care of the way that all veterans deserve to be taken care of, and so these outpatient clinics, by keeping patients out of the hospital, we're saving money. By keeping them in their homes, in their own environments, we're helping save money.
So Barb, why would you tell your husband sometimes you wouldn't want him to go? Why would you say that?
Sometimes it didn't seem like the attention was paid to the vet. Sometimes the attention was paid to the business of it all, and it just was very frustrating because you end up at the big VA med center and you feel like you're a number. I guess that's the big thing, is that my patients felt like they were individuals and they were not just numbers. And so sometimes it just got so overwhelming at the clinic. I mean, right now they have 10,000 patients and they're short a couple of providers. So I can imagine, I mean, I have my
a patients, couple.
Yeah. I have my patients calling me every day, Barb, why don't you come back to work at the VA? Well, that's a whole nother story, but it's just very frustrating to me that I'm not confident enough to send my husband to this outpatient clinic that we drive to Fort Wayne and we drive to Indy. Unfortunately, too, he is a little bit more complicated than the primary care clinic, and so knowing to refer is good, too. So he's got his orthopedic care set up at one institution and his dental care at another, and that's the best that we can do with his situation.
Well, Secretary Principi, what about Barb's issue? How difficult are things when you talk about size and bureaucracy, fundamentally?
Well, it is an issue. I think Barb pointed out an issue, and that is just the sheer number of patients who are coming to us. As we've opened up these outpatient clinics, they become so popular that the numbers very quickly exceed our capability. And then, of course, we have to expand the clinic and bring on more providers. And in some areas of the country, we have the same difficulty recruiting as the private sector does. You know, the nursing shortage in America is growing more acute by the day. And so we have the same challenges to recruit nurses and competing against the private sector. And the same with physicians in rural areas, trying to get physicians to go to rural areas and take care of them. But it's something that we continually address, Cora.
We're speaking with Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Anthony Principi. When we come back, plans for overhauling the VA medical system. We're taking your calls at 800-989-TALK, 800-989-8255. I'm Corva Coleman. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Corva Coleman in Washington, in for Neil Conan. We're talking about the Veterans Administration with Secretary Anthony Principi. You are invited to join the discussion. We especially would like to hear from veterans. What aspects of the VA work well for you, and what would you like to see changed? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Mr. Principi, I read a really interesting story which I think strikes home because you're a veteran. You have friends who work for you, deputies and assistants who are also veterans, and I understand that you sent one out dressed plainly to check the quality and the response time of service
yes.
in VA facilities. Tell us that story.
Yes, Corva. I became concerned, as many veterans became, concerned about the long waiting times to get in clinics. And I just decided I just needed to send one of my people out to go get into as many clinics as possible, incognito, and come back and tell me what they experienced. And the gentleman I asked to go is Gordon Mansfield, a very close friend, my assistant secretary for congressional affairs, who took a bullet in Vietnam after fighting in some of the worst battles of Vietnam, the I Dreng Valley and during the Tet Offensive, and been paralyzed from the waist down since 1968 when I was there shortly after him. And so he did. I said, get your oldest jeans on and T-shirt and wheel yourself into as many of these clinics as you can go to. And he did. He went to about 8 clinics over a couple-day period in Florida and Colorado. And he came back and he said, I'm 100% combat disabled. I took a bullet. I need to enroll. I just moved to this area. In 6 of the 8 clinics, they basically turned him away and said, you know, you really need to go to another clinic. We're oversubscribed here. We have more patients than we need. In one clinic, they told him to drive, 60, 100 miles to the nearest VA medical center. And here was a 100% combat disabled veteran. And I was really quite upset about that. And I took some actions. I first instituted a policy that any disabled veteran, 50% or more, has an immediate priority for care. I mean, I want to take care of as many veterans as I can, disabled or not disabled, irrespective of their income. But I think we should never lose sight of the fact that our core mission, you know, dating back to Abraham Lincoln, to care for him who shall have borne the battle, is our most important priority. So any veteran 50% or greater can go to the front of the line anytime. And so those are the kinds of actions that we're trying to take to get these waiting lines down.
Mr. Principi, we've got a lot of people who would like to talk to you, so we'll turn to Jeff first in Toledo, Ohio. Welcome to Talk of the Nation, Jeff.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call, Mr. Secretary.
Yes, indeed.
I'm an underemployed veteran. I'm an attorney. I've been searching for a better job to support myself and my family, and I've run into a problem where the state agencies in Ohio where I've been applying to don't seem to have any articulable hiring preference for veterans. They don't seem to be taking my status as a veteran seriously. I don't know if that's a problem in the federal system or not. I'm trying to stay in Ohio and haven't applied for that many federal positions. But is there something you can do to help the state of Ohio along with their recognition of hiring preferences for veterans?
Well, I certainly will look into it. I'm not familiar. I apologize. I'm not familiar with the Ohio state laws with regard to veterans' preference. You're right. We do have veterans' preference laws in the federal government for federal hiring. You may want to look into the possibility of seeking a position with the federal government, whether it be my agency, the VA, or one of the many other federal agencies in Ohio, and then we have plenty there throughout the state. And I would be more than happy to look into the Ohio laws and see if there's anything we can do to, if they have them, to make sure they're enforcing the veterans' preference laws, and if not, to see if we can get something done.
Thanks for calling, Jeff.
Thank you.
I would also like to turn to Matt, who's calling from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hi, Matt.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just have kind of a quick question and a bind that I'm kind of running into. I was in the Navy from 90 to 94, and currently my educational benefits are getting close to running out. And what I'm curious about is if there's any way of extending those past the 10-year mark. And I think also a lot of other veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan and stuff like that may run into the same problem. And I'm curious if that can be extended or if there's any kind of legislation to do that.
You're correct. There is a 10-year delimiting date on educational benefits. It's, you know, Congress has always considered it to be a readjustment tool, and they feel that 10 years is a reasonable period of time. There have been efforts in the past to extend that 10-year period. I'm not aware of any legislation currently to do so, although from time to time it is considered. We have some efforts underway now to identify what the needs are for our veterans of our most recent wars and conflicts. And I certainly will take your concern into consideration and try to identify whether this is getting to be a serious problem for our veteran population.
I have a question for you from email from Sally, who says, since many reservists are now currently serving, what benefits will they be entitled to? As it stands now, isn't it true that they're only qualified to use the VA if they serve 20, she puts in quotes, good years?
No, not at all.
Okay, Sally, listen up.
Any reservist or guardsman that have been called up to active duty receive veterans benefits, and you do not have to serve 20 years. Now, if you're not called up to active duty, there is a difference in the level of benefits that reservists receive and guards, men and women, as opposed to the regular active force. But called up to active duty, you get the veterans benefits. We have in place now a high priority of care for anyone who serves in Iraq, Afghanistan. When they come home for 2 years, they don't have to worry about enrollment in the VA healthcare system. They get that high priority for health care, as well as, you know, their educational benefits. You have your vocational rehabilitation if you're injured, of course, disability compensation. If you have any questions at all, please call your local regional office, VA regional office, in the government section of the White Pages, and they can explain it to you, or you can contact us, and we'll send you a book of all the veterans' benefits that you're eligible for.
I have another email here about eligibility from Ivan Ramos, and he says, who is eligible to go to the VA? Is it just war veterans, or is any vet with an honorable discharge eligible?
Any veteran with an honorable discharge is eligible, and for health care or for the other benefits. Now, they may not be eligible, for example, education because the time has expired, but there's the housing program. We make almost 1,000 home loans each and every day of the year, and other benefits. So, yes, indeed, contact your VA regional office or your medical center to get the care and benefits you've earned.
We turn to Tim, who's calling from Tokyo. Good morning, Tim.
Morning.
Good morning. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Mr. Secretary, I served from 1984 to 91 in the Air Force and am a veteran of Operation Just Cause. And currently I'm employed as a contractor on an Air Force installation in Japan. And I have a service-connected disability plus ongoing medical issues. But since I'm not in the United States and not able to use the VA facility, is there any way that I can somehow benefit from the VA services overseas, especially when I need medication every month, probably for the rest of my life?
Can Tim be helped?
I believe you can be helped. I'm a little hesitant. I apologize. I want to make sure I'm saying the correct thing. But as a service-connected disabled veteran, you should be eligible to receive your medications overseas if their medications are related to your disability. If you could let the station know somehow how we can contact you, that I can have someone get in touch with you to see how we can facilitate your care overseas, I would be happy to do so.
Tim?
Thank you.
I'd like you to hold on, please.
All right, thank you.
Do you get? I have another email here from John in Berkeley who says his friend became drug addicted while on service in Somalia. Does the VA believe treatment is or is not warranted in VA facilities for this addiction?
Well, if it can be shown that his service in Somalia may have caused him to have post-traumatic stress disorder, what we call PTSD, and if his addiction is somehow related to the trauma of war, or if he was involved in the infamous battle in Somalia when we lost troops at one point years ago, then he should definitely contact the VA regional office and file a claim for disability compensation. So there is a possibility, but it has to be shown to be service-related, that is, a post-traumatic stress disorder-related type of condition that would lead to alcohol or substance abuse. I'm not trying to say that we often provide for substance abuse itself, but there are some ways that we can take care of you.
I'd like to turn to John in an unpronounceable town in New York.
Hi,
you'll have
you.
To say it for me, John.
It's Canandaigua.
Canandaigua.
Yeah, I wanted to ask the secretary. He's talking about demand for their services increasing like crazy, and given the state of the world these days, I don't see that changing anytime soon. But I know they're closing facilities. Why is that?
My predecessor started a process called CARES. It's a capital asset realignment for hand services, and I elected to continue it because I think it's important. You raise a very, very key issue. It's not about closing facilities. It's about transforming the VA into a 21st century healthcare system. As we know, technology, drug therapy, telemedicine, telemetry, digital radiology have absolutely redefined how medicine is delivered in this nation, along with dramatic changes in the demographics of the veteran population. The VA has infrastructure across the country that has been part of the VA in some cases for 100, 125 years. Facilities that we inherited from the Army at the turn of the 20th century that became VA tuberculosis hospitals, then at a time when we warehoused mental health patients with chronic mental illness and threw away the key. And, of course, we know that healthcare has changed dramatically, and we can now allow veterans to live at home with chronic mental illness with these new revolutionary drugs, atypical antipsychotics, instead of keeping them in facilities. Facilities like Canandaigua that one time housed maybe 1,800 patients, 2,000 patients, now has less than 200 patients. So I haven't approved closing of any facilities. We have a draft national plan that I submitted to a commission to look at. They have to report back to me what changes should take place in the VA. Again, I'm just looking to transform the VA to ensure that it's the right system to treat veterans in the 21st century, and cognizant of the economic impact and those types of issues.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Tell me about the future of the VA, Mr. Principi. Where's it going?
Well, I think the VA is a national resource. I think the healthcare system is a national resource. We provide care to millions of Americans who serve their nation in uniform, and many of whom have few other options for healthcare in this country. In many cases, they're the poorest of the poor. And so the VA needs to be there, but we need to restructure ourselves. The demographics of the veteran population are changing. War has changed. You know, my war, the Vietnam War, our war, 58,000 Americans died. You know, World War II, 16 million served. So the relatively modern battleground, although it's tragic that we do take casualties, the numbers are far less. And the World War II population is dying off. You know, we're losing 1,800 veterans a day in this country. Korean, World War II, my generation, of course, are aging as well. So the numbers are declining rather dramatically, and military manpower levels are at low levels relative to the past. So it's going to mean that the VA is going to have to change as well to address the changing dynamics of the battlefield and the changing demographics of the veteran population. And that sometimes calls for making tough, difficult decisions.
We turn to Jimmy in Gastonia, North Carolina. Hi, Jimmy.
Yes, please. I just want to suggest for the veterans that are out there and listening that they learn all the benefits that's out there for them because they work and they work well. Want to thank the Secretary because of that. I'm a Vietnam-era veteran, served three tours of active duty, one during the Vietnam era, one during the Grenada area, 83 through 87, and then with all the Guard and Reserve called up through 90 through 91 with Desert Shield and Desert Storm. And working with the local VA office, and I'm 60% disability drawing, have been able to use my educational benefits for college, seminary, and graduate work. And I just want the guys and gals to know that it's there. Educate themselves about all the great stuff that the VA has to take and offer. And just to thank them for that, because I think they are very, very diligent. I see the physicians and the nurses at the VA Center in Asheville, North Carolina, and they are just great folks. And I thank you so very much for the time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was great advice.
From Jimmy.
From Jimmy.
Do you often find that vets don't have the information that they need for, I'm not saying any malicious reason, they just need it and they need to educate themselves? And
yes, they do. Oftentimes, you know, where I remember you come back from combat or you know, and you're getting ready to leave the military, all you want to do is leave. You know, you want to go home. You just want to get home. You know, you don't take the time to learn about all the benefits that you've earned. And so it is a little bit of a struggle. You know, it's hard to believe, Gorva, that we have probably 11,000 men and some women who are POWs who don't draw any benefits from the VA. I mean, these are men who survived the Bataan Death March, you know, the infamous hell ships to Japan, the slave labor camps, and never asked for anything.
They never asked for anything. And they should.
They should indeed.
Well, we've been speaking with the Secretary of the Veterans Administration, Anthony Principi. Mr. Principi, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Coming up after the break, with several animal attacks in the news, we'll consider the dangers of humans interacting with wild animals. I'm Corva Coleman. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.